Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, it's Rob Benedict
and Richard Spade Jr.
And we're talking about Supernatural Season 3, Episode 5, Bedtime Stories.
All right, good night, Rob.
Good night. Good night, Rich.
You're going to read me a bedtime story, right? That's what this is all about.
That's exactly right. Hey, first of all, something fun we've been seeing our members on Patreon do is they're scheduling watch-along screenings with each other on Discord so they can watch episodes together before the podcast comes out.
Is that true?
I'm just reading the facts. Yes.
I'm literally just, a fax to your house by Steve.
I'm literally just the reporter here. It's funny, like I'm the guy in the street and you're the guy at the studio. Is that true, Bob? I don't know, Steve.
This lady in a raincoat says.
So there's also been great conversation and fan theories about the Winchesters, especially after our appearances on the show.
Wait a minute. Spoiler alert. Rob and Rich were on the show, on the Winchesters?
Apparently. I mean, I know you were.
Hit series from the people who brought you Supernatural, being Jensen Ackles and Danielle Ackles, with Robbie Thompson heading it up as showrunner. That's the Winchesters?
And starring Richard Spade Jr. back again as the trickster.
The one that airs on the CW?
That's right.
That aired episode 8 2 days ago?
That's right. Starring Richard Spade Jr. as the trickster.
The one that people can watch on the CW app right now. That the Winchesters.
That's Winchesters.
Oh, man. That's great.
So, anyway, that's kind of fun that people have been watching this along with us and then also having conversation about the Winchesters. Yeah, and then my band, the Loudon Swain, was on this most recent episode.
Wait, they're called the Loudon Swain? I didn't know there was an article.
Yeah, they're called the Loudon Swain. We used to be but the Loudon Swain.
Now we're
just the Loudon Swain.
You literally said my band, the Loudon Swain.
Did I really?
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, there you go.
I like that. I think it's a, I like that sort of change. I actually like but the Loudon Swain. That's a neat sort of.
Maybe we should change it. And then people really won't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, so that was kind of fun to do. More on that later. Unless you have something else you want to say about that, Rich. You're being real quiet and kind of cagey about the whole thing.
I just think it's so exciting to know that people can watch the Winchesters on the CW app and catch up on all their favorite shows like the Winchesters.
Once a commercial star, always a commercial star. All right, well, let's get into this bedtime stories. So tuck yourself in, Rich.
I already am, Robbie. And you know, I sleep in the nude. Huzzah!
I just threw my coffee up. Okay, the cold has been fixed, and Sam and Dean argue about whether to use it on the crossroads demon that Dean has made a deal with. Dean argues that it's all maybes and ifs.
Man, I get tired of all the maybes and ifs.
So many maybes and ifs.
How about a perhaps and a why not? You know,
right.
Can you mix it up a little bit?
Or a but the. They don't know what will happen if they kill the crossroads demon, but he gets Sam to change the subject to a possible case in Maple Springs, New York. The details point to a werewolf.
Where?
Maple Springs, New York. Once they get to Maple Springs, they interview the lone survivor of an attack that killed his two brothers. By the way, the three brothers have an intentional resemblance to the three little pigs, but we don't really know that yet.
Yeah, man, I don't want to be part of that casting call right now.
Really,
you put out a casting session going, hey, we need three actors to kind of resemble the three little pigs, and you're canceled.
No, I just thought they were three strapping men.
Three, just kind of hardy fellas.
Really very hardy. They argue about building a house out of wood or brick. One even snorts like a pig when he giggles. Now, all that is true, and I didn't catch any of that. Now, all that went right over my head. I'm just now, in reading this, going, oh, okay.
Well, I figured it out, and they sort of referenced it in the episode, but at the time...
I, Watching, yeah, I figured out that the three little pigs, and Dean kind of says like, oh yeah, they were kind of hefty guys, but I didn't realize there was a snort and a wood and brick thing.
No, why is there a frog everywhere? That's the other question.
Well, but, we find
we'll
out.
Get to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Soon after this, another grim crime occurs. A brother and sister get lost in the woods, and a kindly old woman invites them into her charming yet secluded home. Then she fattens them up with desserts and stabs them with a giant butcher knife. Sounds like a visit to the Spade House in Nashville.
It sure does.
The sister survives, and when questioned by Sam and Dean, reports a creepy kid standing in the window.
The only difference is when you come to the Spade House in Los Angeles, you're sliced up by a machete.
That's true.
But otherwise, exactly the same.
And also creepy kid count up by one for this episode, right?
Yeah, damn right.
The brothers start to notice the parallels between the killings and classic fairy tales. Soon they stumble upon another crime. A woman has been handcuffed and beaten by her wicked stepmother.
Oh.
At the scene of the crime, Sam sees the creepy kid again and pursues her, but she disappears. Sam and Dean head to the children's hospital to look for the creepy kid. They don't find her, but discover that there is a woman there who has been in a coma since she was 8. Her father is a local doctor who reads Grimm's fairy tales to her by her bedside. She's in a coma because her stepmother was slowly poisoning her to keep her dependent. Living halfway between two worlds for so long, she's mastered the art of taking over other people's bodies and has been acting out the fairy tales to try and get attention. Boy, I mean, she could have just written a note on a chalkboard or something.
Yeah, what
right?
happened to a little art? You know, a little watercolor.
Yeah. Sam confronts the doctor.
Write a song, woman.
I know, yeah. Right? Sam, that's what I would have done. Sam confronts the doctor about this, and he admits he has seen his daughter's spirit too. Sam is able to act as a conduit, and the doctor's able to speak to the spirit of his daughter. She confirms she was poisoned. He accepts the truth. The woman's body dies, and the spirit is able to move on. Later, while alone, Sam summons the crossroads demon. She says Dean's contract isn't up to her. There is a more powerful demon, her boss, that holds it. Sam shoots her with the Colt, perhaps eliminating his one lead to finding out who holds Dean's contract.
I'll tell you who holds Dean's contract. Peter Roth, the head of Warner Brothers, held that contract.
That's right. That's right. He was the head of Warner Brothers at the time of this this episode. So this episode, Rich, thoughts,
Let's
feelings.
Get to the portion of the program I call RRR. Rob and Rich Review.
Thoughts?
I mean, the idea was clever. You know, like the three little pig thing we just talked about.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
They sort
yeah.
of subtly put that yep. in there.
And then the frog, that we see this recurring frog, and we're like, what's up with the frog? And it turns out it's, you know, if Dean were to kiss it, it would turn into the prince?
I don't know. I don't know what the frog was about. I don't.
Well, you know,
the frog issue was never resolved, right?
The princess and the frog is a fairy tale. But no, it never gets resolved, does it?
No.
Dean just says, I'm not kissing the frog. But if he would have, it would have turned into Prince, the star Prince.
Yeah, exactly. But that's an expensive episode.
Yeah,
dude, I don't know. And then I thought, kind of clever, the old lady in the woods, and she kills the dude and lets the young lady go.
Creepy the way that she stabs them.
Yeah, very, very.
And she's just
aggro.
Like,
yeah,
nonchalant. The guy who plays the doctor was really terrific. I see him a lot.
Dude, I recognize that guy.
Who's that? Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff.
Do you have any idea what his name is?
Christopher Cousins? No?
Must
was that him?
He's probably not Sandra McCoy, so yeah.
Anyway, he was great.
He was great. Did a great job.
Yeah.
Look, I thought that part of the story was really touching, and that like this dad was being awesome to his daughter, and
yes.
you know, I thought that was really sweet how we ended up there, you know?
And I like the end of the episode with Sam sort of ruthlessly shooting the crossroads demon.
Even Sam kind of confronting the doctor was a well done scene by both actors, and tough to watch, because you're basically like, hey, you're the woman you love yeah. who helped raise your child actually killed your daughter and put her in yeah. this like catatonic state.
Really. Although it was kind of funny because he was like, yeah, Sam, I mean, both of them acted the hell out of that scene, but Sam's like, this is going to be sound crazy. But he's like, what do you know? You don't know anything. Who are you? What are you talking about? How'd you get in here? Get out. Sam's like, this is going to sound crazy, but your daughter's still with us. And he's like, you saw that too? Like, he turned so quick. So I think we're both leading to the same thing, which all of it is very creative. The acting is great. It left me going, eh.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It was clever. I kind of think it didn't know if it wanted to be one of those supernatural tongue-in-cheek funny episodes or if it wanted to be a gripping drama. And
yeah.
I think it kind of had a foot in both worlds. So it was neither either.
I think it would have worked better in season one. The concept was very season one to me. The monster of the week kind of thing in this creative way. But we're kind of deep into this story now. You kind of want to find out more about the story of what is Dean going to die. Is, you know what I mean? I was more intrigued by that last scene with Sam and the Crossroads demon than I was by the meat and potatoes of the episode.
So I'm going to get, I'll go ahead and leap in here just so we can start the process, because you know we've loved so many that we rarely come off of our high watermarks. But I'm not giving this a Stapleton. I'm not even going to give this a full Rob Benedict. I'm going to give this this gets a Sam Elliott from me. He gets a nice healthy mustache, looks good, but the rest is just not there.
Okay yeah, no, I feel you. All right, okay, so I'm gonna give it the beard and chops with no chin beard that the keyboard player from the band on the Winchesters 2 days ago had.
Tango. I saw him in the credits.
There's
a musician named Tango. Okay.
Yeah.
So he gets the Tango. If you haven't, if you don't have a visual reference to what Rob's talking about, go to your CW app. Check out the new show, The Winchesters. Episode 108 is just aired, and now it's available on your CW app. Watch the episode. You'll see the musical performer Rob is referring to.
And if you want a shortcut, just go to my Instagram page, R.O. Benedict, at Instagram, and I posted a picture of that guy.
Yeah, I always think it's funny that your Instagram handle is Ro Benedict.
I know. Which was honestly a typo when I first did it. I did it real quick. And I just didn't do the two B's, Rob.
Benedict. Okay, so we get one Tango and one Sam Elliott. Great. Love it.
So our guest today is a name that we mention in every episode of our podcast. It's Tim Wynn.
What?
Yeah, he's worked as a composer in film, TV, and video games. His work has appeared in films such as Horrible Bosses 2 and Freaks. He's written the score for such hit game franchises as Warhammer, XCOM, Madden, Command & Conquer, Marvel's The Punisher, and most recently Marvel's Midnight Suns, which is also Rich and my street name. He's provided music to over 80 episodes across all 15 seasons of Supernatural. Ladies,
you can't have Winchesters without Wynn. Let's bring in Tim Wynn.
Tim, it's great to have you because, you know, we mention your name every episode of our podcast. So,
of course,
you're intrinsically a part of this process, whether you like it or not.
Well, I appreciate all the accolades for that. Yes, I'm happy to add music for you.
Yeah, it's great. It's been awesome. And it really makes our show sound like an actual podcast, which is exciting.
I know. It's really trippy when you hear other things Rob and I have done, and then you listen to this one like, oh, wow, music really does help a lot.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
And you are you zooming in from Los Angeles, California? Are you LA-based?
Yeah, LA-based, yeah.
Nice.
So let's get into it. So what was your role on the music team of Supernatural?
So I was an additional composer. So that means, you know, I add here and there. I think over 15 seasons when I was getting ready to go on the podcast, because I'm not always looking back. I don't know if you guys are the same way, always kind of looking forward. So someday I'll look back on my career and, you know, total all up. But so over 15 seasons, I was able to write on over 90 episodes.
Wow.
Wow.
And did you work with both of the composers?
Mostly Chris. Uh-huh. Chris and I go way back, even with Eric Chris. You know, we all went to college together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we met back in those days.
And that's USC, right?
Yeah, USC.
So we're talking about the episode Bedtime Stories.
Yes.
What about Bedtime Stories stands out to you as a, you know, an episode from season three that means something to you?
Well, I always had a soft spot in my heart of the episodes that kind of weren't following the script and they were kind of unique and had kind of a twist to them. Mm-hmm. So for me, I mean, when I was looking at episodes in season three, that one jumped out to me.
Yeah.
I just thought it was kind of unique and fun and silly in a way, but I like how it all incorporated the Brothers Grimm stories and, you know, how all the Supernatural episodes, for the most part, they just had a really cool creative thing about it that was like, wow, that's a unique twist on that. So that's what I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was super unique in that regard. Rob and I were talking about how there are certain Supernatural episodes, to your point, that kind of veer off the traditional straight line narrative that they had been doing during the seasons, but don't steer too far off as to lose their point. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they still make sense in the story and the overreaching brother's story, and but they just bring a sort of an element of unique fun.
In terms of composing, what's the difference between the way you would approach like a standalone Monster of the Week episode versus the heavier mythology episodes? Is there a different character that the music takes on when it's a show, an episode like this, that's sort of this, like you said, a kind of this quirky creative bent?
Yeah, I mean, this one especially was meant to sound, you know, sort of like a fairy tale. So the music, if you remember it, it's very pretty much different than any other episode that I wrote on.
Oh, wow.
For Supernatural, because it was supposed to be kind of fairy tale, like a lot of bells and pianos and
yeah, you answered my question. I was going to say, what describe to me what fairy tale feels like, and you're saying bells, pianos, what else?
Yeah, well, glockenspiel. I hate to say it, but the cliche is wind chimes, and I forgot that. When we record the music and we mix it, it gets mixed by the show creators. So sometimes you put something in and you're like, oh my God, they made up put up the volume really high. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the wind chimes. It's just like, that's like the first cue. It just starts off with this super loud wind chime. So, but it always evokes that sort of fairy tale atmosphere to it. So there's a reason why it's a cliche and it was used here.
So welcome.
But it does trigger a reaction though, Rob. Like, you know what I mean? Like when you hear those, there are just certain sounds that when you hear them, you immediately know it's a bedtime story or a lullaby or that kind of childlike,
yeah,
which can be used obviously for innocence or for creepy effect really, really effectively.
Yeah, and it really adds some, I mean, go back now, everyone, and watch some of these scenes and think about the music. It changes, it really informs what you're watching, informs what kind of episode it's going to be, you know, and all these thoughts that we come off going, oh, that was, you know, that kind of episode. The music plays so much a part of that, creating that atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the thing that it was very apparent to me when I was going to USC and we were in the film scoring part and there'd be 13 episodes. And so we would score a scene a week and then as students, and we'd all look at what we'd all done. And there's so many different ways that you could see how every twist and turn and how somebody would use a different instrument here or a different note or something and how it would really affect the dialogue, the acting, all these other things like that. So I feel like music really helps the story and we're really telling you what to feel and helping you feel it. And so if there was a way to turn off the music and watch the scene at the same time, you would instantly see, or you would feel it more than hear it. I mean, I've had so many people come to me and say, well, I love the movie and it was so emotional and this and that. I don't know if I didn't think about your music or this or that, but you subconsciously thought about it because you felt that emotion. So I'm telling you to cry. I'm telling you to be scared. I'm telling you to all of these things as the music. So, but it's, you know, it's a collaborative effect. So it's like when the actors do a great job, it makes my job easier and the scene and if the script is great. So it's all part of the process.
Let me ask you this. There's sort of that old adage that if you notice the camera work or you notice the editing, it's not doing its job. You know what I mean? Like like what you just described is it should all feel like an oil painting, not, oh, there's the color red. You know what I mean? Like you're just seeing the work. You're not as. Do you think that music works in that same capacity?
Yeah, 100%. I think this the same thing. I mean, we talk about it all the time as composers, where if we get noticed, then 9 times out of 10 it would be a bad thing. So when I'll read a review of a film I work on and or a TV show for that matter, and then they just talk about, you know, the emotion or this or that. They didn't mention the music, but they talk about how effective it was emotionally and stuff like that. So as long as I'm staying out of the headlines, I feel like I've done something right. So, yeah.
I have a question that I never really knew the answer to. So when you said earlier that you hear the final mix and the wind chimes are up and you're like, oh, wow, they really, you know, focus on the wind chimes. When you turn in, when the composers turn in your product, do you give the sound mixers the stems? So yes. In other words, the different parts of what you recorded, the music. So they actually remix your composition.
In a way, for Supernatural, we only had 4 stems. So there's not too much that you can do with 4 stems. So 4 stereo stems. So that's 8 tracks in total. So it would be strings would be on 1 stem, or all the orchestra would be on 1 stem. The percussion would be on 1 stem. the piano would be on one stem and maybe some sound effects would be on the other stem if there was like creepy strings or something like that. So, but if there was something very specific that I knew that they would like to be altered up or down for one thing, I would put it on a separate stem. For the most part, they have those to work with because you can't, unlike a film, you can't sit there all day and remix it. You don't have that. There's just not time for it in TV.
Right.
I mean, the schedules are brutal. And so you have to kind of get it right as a composer right out of the gate.
Right.
And so that's why it's very important. And it's a great skill to learn that you have to be near perfect from day one. And I think what Chris and Jay both did on this show was really perfect from day one. I mean, right. It sounded from episode one to episode 15, 20, or whatever the last episode was. I mean, it had this consistency to it, and it was really great. And so for me, being just a part of it, it was an amazing experience. So.
Okay, guys, hold on. We're coming right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
And we're back.
Let me ask you a question. Having gone out in the world and worked on other shows, my opinion on this is even broader than it had been when I was simply acting. But, you know, when you're looking at a show or a movie, but we'll talk about a show in this case, and you're thinking about you or thinking about where does music go? Sometimes the answer is there should be nothing here, right? Like sometimes you're like, this needs to be dry and we'll go without music. But at the end of the day, you have your opinion, but somebody else cutting the checks really decides these things. Do you ever find yourself lobbying for less or more and finding that to be
a challenge?
Not in sync. Yeah, a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I like to say, and I think I heard it, one of our instructors, Elmer Bernstein at USC, I think he mentioned that silence is its own music. You know, an absence of music is music.
Wow, that's well said.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I wish I could take credit for it, but I give it to Elmer. But
that up-and-comer Elmer Bernstein said it.
Yeah, that guy, you know, all these Academy Awards and things like that. So So yeah, so there are times that you fight it, but you quickly learn that you can't fight the machine, and you do the best you can. And when where music comes, if you really feel strongly about it, and I have done it, if it's a super important scene where I will write an alternate and say, listen, director or producer or whoever it is I'm talking to, I'm like, I really feel like it could be better if we start the music later or here or this. And for the most part, throughout the years, they've been very receptive and respectful to my opinions.
Right.
But if they have in their head, they want a piece of music there, you got to give it to them the best way that you possibly can, and agree or not agree. You got to make it work some way or another. Or, I remember I did a movie and there was two directors. So that's sometimes kind of hard to deal with because they can disagree. Most of the time they would agree, but there would be a time where there's a scene that they are like, no, it should be this way. And the other one was like, no, it should be this way. I go, look, I'll do it both ways. And then you guys can flip a coin. We can both agree. So you can see it both ways. And then that's what it is.
Wow.
And you make them both happy. And I can't do that for every single scene. I mean, you can't, it's impossible to do that. But for specific scenes, to make sure that both directors they feel like they're respected and heard and listened to, then I'll do that. Sure.
I was just going to say, I love about filmmaking in general that it's such a collaborative process. I mean, even the Scorsese's and Spielberg's, they've got composers that they love and trust, and cinematographers they love and trust. It's not just a one man operation. It's a complete team. Without the team, it doesn't work.
Oh, and absolutely. And, you bring up, some of the all-time greats, and the process compared to now was completely different back then. They would listen to piano sketches and they wouldn't have it all synced up perfectly. They wouldn't be watching QuickTimes on their iPads or things like that and giving notes. I mean, they would have to go to the scoring stage with really not knowing what was going to come. And I think in a lot of ways that it was not, I don't want to say better, but it was
more exciting.
Well, more exciting because there's nothing like, even when I'll have something that I wrote for orchestra and I have it all mocked up and it sounds pretty good for orchestra and against a scene. But when you have a live orchestra perform it, it's just like, there's something that I'm like, oh my God, this is so much better. I love it. It sounds amazing. And so I think they had back there, it was the same thing. All they heard were these piano sketches. And then you hear like, say the Jaws theme, for instance, the first time you heard it, Spielberg heard it, you're like, oh my God. Yeah. And you're just blown away by, and you're part of this experience. So it was a better process in some way. It was more difficult and more costly, I'm sure, but it was something about it that the collaborative effort with the orchestra is also an entity, because we don't always think about the musicians that perform,
the string players
string players, they add so much. And you want them to be able to have their voice as well. And so that's part of the process that we don't have anymore, because there are so many cooks in the kitchen and there's not as much trust as like, hey, trust me, when we get to the scoring stage, you're going to love it. I mean, if you have to have a really good situation with your directors and producers and composers, because it's kind of like the same thing. It's like, all right, let's not have a table read. Before the episode, they're like, hey, don't worry, I've got this. I mean, that's not really how it works anymore.
Right.
So,
well, that used to be cinematography too. There were no monitors. Right. Like directors would describe the scene to the cinematographer. He'd be watching it through an eyepiece and that's it, man, because there was no way to watch it on an external monitor. Mm-hmm. You're watching it be shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they were called dailies, because you'd see them later that day or the next day. Mm-hmm. Or whatever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And sketching and everything that goes into the process is really like every frame is planned out so specifically. So sometimes movies or TV shows can feel, mostly movies, because they have the time to kind of do that effort. Sometimes it can feel a little less lively than maybe the old films and shows and things like that, in my opinion, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So just because everything was planned out, and then look at the Star Wars, like the original Star Wars versus the remakes that, George Lucas did. And it just had a different quality to it. It wasn't, I don't want to say it was worse, but it just didn't have like a spontaneity to it or something to it. Mm-hmm. So
right.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. I have one other question that's specific to you and your experience with Supernatural. When you're talking about doing additional orchestration for the show and doing 80, or 90, which is an unbelievable number, but it's not exactly half, meaning you were doing. So how did you schedule your life around your work on Supernatural? Because it seems like it wasn't necessarily set your watch to it work.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of depended on schedule. I mean, it's hard, and you guys as actors go through it, and everybody as creatives, we're always trying to get our schedules just lined up the way that we want to and service all the people that were so happy that hire us all the time. So there's times that I couldn't work on Supernatural. And so that's been on through the years. So it just depends on your schedule. Like how much can I bear? Because you want a good work-life balance. And starting back when Chris asked me to be part of the mix, I didn't know it was going to go for 15 seasons. And we had no idea. It's kind of, you know, it's just like, oh, okay, well, we'll see how long it goes. We weren't even thinking about it. We were just thinking about, well, what's best? Well, we're all friends with Eric. All we want is success to the show. We wanted to help tell his story. Mm-hmm. And an amazing story it was. So that's all we really were focused on is doing that. So, you know, you fit in things when you can. Sometimes I would skip out and I couldn't work on those episodes or whatever like that. But we were always in discussions about what would be best for the show.
How much advance notice would you get when you were going to work on one?
Well, once you started the season, we would get a master calendar of when it would work on or when the episodes would roughly happen. So we kind of knew right away when it was going to happen. So if I had another project that I couldn't be a part of Supernatural, then I would say I'm out for this week or I can't do it here and there. So it just kind of depended on it. I'm trying to think back from the 15 seasons of all the things that came up or if, you know, I had a child or, you know, you know that happened. I had two children during the things and then Chris did as well. So, I mean, a lot of, you know, life, you know, just it happened. And so that's the thing about TV and where I think that I was brought in was just because you don't have a lot of leeway. I mean, I learned quickly on another show where you can write good music, you can write bad music, but you have to write music. There's no time for writer's block. There's no time for anything like that. And there would be an occasion where I would write something that I wasn't necessarily proud of. And I was like, well, I only had very short time to work on it, but I had to turn it in so the executive could look at it.
Right.
And there's sometimes the cues that I took the least amount of time on, I would get the notes back where, oh my God, this is the best cue you've ever written in your life. And it's amazing. And what have you. So you sometimes you just have to put it all in perspective and some ideas are good and bad. And you got to know which is the good ones and bad ones. And when it comes to writer's block and TV, you don't really have time for it. So it's easier to adjust a bad cue than it is to just stare at a blank page and go, I don't know what I'm going to write. You can't. You have to write it. And if it's terrible, you know, come back to it later the day and you're like, oh, okay, I understand, with a fresh sort of voice to it, or the next day and then adjust it accordingly. It's much easier that way.
With this episode with Bedtime Stories, there's a shift. At the end, there's a scene where Sam's with the Crossroads Demon.
Yes.
And that's obviously a different thing than the fairy tales that we've been watching. Is there... Creatively, do you go, okay, this is a gear shift here, so it's going to be a completely different kind of music in this scene that we've been doing the rest of the episode?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the episode, the fairy tale stuff, they ended, you know, as soon as the little girl died.
Right.
That was almost like all right, let's pause before the break and then, you know, have a coda at the end with the demon. And then the demon music was all, you know, so much different. That was more the story arc that goes throughout season three.
Right.
Sort of stuff like that. So yeah, absolutely. It's just a total switch.
Which is such a cue to the viewer's brain really going like, oh, okay. So this is the through line. You know what I mean? It cues the audience's brain and makes you go, oh, okay, this is what I'm watching here story-wise. It adds so much. Yeah. I mean, it's really amazing.
Yeah. No, thank you. No, it's we were so happy. We loved there's an ethnic instrument we use called a duduk to it, and it has like this quality of spiritual sort of evilly sort of quality to it, and that's playing through it. And the great Chris Bleth played on that for duduk, he did an amazing job, and it really, I think it helped tell the stories of the demons and hell and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So.
That's awesome.
How do you spell that? Dudek?
Dudek is D-U-D-E-K.
Okay. I got to look that up. Never heard of that instrument.
Yeah. It's a, you know, Passion of the Christ. It was in that movie. I mean, there's a lot of different movies, but once you hear it, you can't unhear it.
Huh. Wow.
you'll start to, and that's the thing, I think, that I don't know how you guys are when you're watching other film and TV shows, is it's hard for us not to always be working.
Right.
And so when I'm watching a movie, I'm always thinking about the score. I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about that. And so I always feel like I'm working. So it's the same thing with instruments, you know, things like that. So it's like, we never have a day off.
Yeah.
You know, if you're always watching your shows, if you're always doing that, you can't relax. So yeah. It's like, you got to do something totally, totally different at the end of the day to kind of like just clear your mind.
Yeah.
Enter ice fishing. I know what you mean. Tim, thank you so much for being a part of the show. I mean, you're a part of the show every single week because you're our composer for Supernatural Then and Now, but also, gosh, an integral part of Supernatural for its 15-year run, man. Thank you for coming in and bringing your stories and personality to our podcast.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim Wynn. Absolutely. Appreciate you.
This is Jared Padalecki stopping in to say hi and let you know that we've got to take a quick break.
Hey, it's Richard Speight, and I got a question for you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So, she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the frickin' planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And hey, all of this sounds fantastic, but the proof is in the pudding, and what I mean is, do the dogs like it? Well, I can speak for my own dog, Luna. She freaking loves it. And that's saying something, because she's no vacuum cleaner, you know? I've seen dogs eat a sofa. But not Luna. Luna is very persnickety, very high maintenance, especially when it comes to what she eats. And Luna went crazy for this food, and I'm loving what it's doing for her. She's got great energy, she looks fantastic, and I'm assuming she feels great. She usually just says, arf, but I'm going to interpret that as, you know what, Rich? Feeling pretty good. So how do you get this fantastic food for your dog? Go to badlands.com/SPNTAN. And order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/SPNTAN today.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listening. Now, back to the episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a brand new segment to premiere for you all, and this could be a home run or it could be a strikeout. We don't know, but we're going to give it a go. We call it Stand Theater. All right, Rich, why don't you tell the people what this is going to be?
This is an actual scene from Supernatural. Mm-hmm. Dialogue as written by a professional writer, word for word as spoken by Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester, Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester. Only now, the roles are being played by two different performers, Rob Benedict in the role of Dean and Richard Speight in the role of Sam. Now, this doesn't mean that Rob Benedict has to do his spot-on Jensen imitation.
It means I'm doing the Rob Benedict interpretation of what...
Whatever comes to mind,
whatever,
buddy.
Whatever comes to mind. And then the only reason that he's cast as Sam is because he's taller than me.
Exactly, and I have long flowing hair.
True. And is this episode from...
Bedtime Stories. It's the very episode we are reviewing.
Okay.
It takes place in the old lady's home. It's a scene in the old lady's home. Now, listen, Trey Booty's going to put a lot of cool, like, ambient sound right now, and maybe in some footsteps. Sorry, Trey, it's made your job harder. It's going to be like you're listening to a sound clip from Supernatural. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the very first segment of Supernatural Then and Now Theater.
Fade in, interior, old lady's home, day.
Yeah, it's going nuts. When I went over here by the window, there's definitely a spirit here.
Yeah, who stood outside the crime scene and watched.
Looks like.
What the hell do you make of that?
Actually, I do have a theory. Sort of.
Hit me.
Well, thinking about fairy tales.
Oh, that's nice. You think about fairy tales often?
No, Dean. I'm talking about the murders. A guy and a girl hiking through the woods an old lady tries to eat them. That's Hansel and Gretel. And then we got three brothers arguing how to build houses, attacked by a big bad wolf.
Ah, the three little pigs?
Yeah.
Actually, those guys were a little chubby. Well, wait. I thought those things ended with, everybody living happily ever after.
No, not the originals. See, the Grimm Brothers stuff was kind of the folklore of its day. Full of sex, violence, cannibalism. Now it got sanitized over the years. Turned into Disney flicks and bedtime stories.
I saw what? You think the murders are, reenactment? That's a little crazy.
Crazy or what? Every day of our lives?
Touché. How's the creepy ghost girl involved?
Well, she must have been here for a reason. I'm willing to bet you top dollar she was at the construction site, too.
We gotta do research now, don't we?
I'm gonna shrug now. Shrug!
Sam shrugs, and scene.
It was like watching the show. I don't know how you guys felt. It was like unbelievable.
I don't know if the segment's going to work because it's basically just like it's watching the scene from the show.
Yeah, it's exactly like having Jared and Dinda come in and reenact it. It's almost pointless.
But also, you know what, Rich? It showcases your and my acting ability.
It certainly does. I will also say this. We took a 1 minute scene and made it 7 minutes. So.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
we know how to milk a cow. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being involved in our very first segment, very first performance of Supernatural Then and Now Theater Fake Applause.
Stan Theater. You know, I think I think it might work. And every time we do different voices.
That was funny.
Yeah.
I don't know, Rob, your voice is pretty funny. You can stick with that. It's pretty good. We'll switch it up, but that was good.
All right, well, let's get into the next segment, which is one you know and love, and it's called Mythology.
Mythology.
Grimm's Fairy Tales, originally published in 1812 under the title Children's and Household Tales. It was a German collection of fairy tales by Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm.
You mean Wilhelm!
Wilhelm! The original volume contained 86 tales. Subsequent volumes were published and brought to the total number of stories to over 200.
The original volume wasn't intended for children and was more reflective of the oral stories that had been passed down. It was originally intended to preserve these stories.
The original included stories such as The Children Played at Slaughtering and The Children of Famine. Aw, it's cute. All right, night, night. As the book became more popular, the brothers continued to revise the stories to make them more broadly appealing. So much so that the final volume published in 1857, 45 years after the first, barely resembled the original.
All the work you've had done.
But seriously, imagine being the publisher back in the late 1800s. Like, so listen, Wilhelm, with Jacob, can we pull back the darkness?
I like that. So I had the old whale blubber lantern going last night. I was reading a little bit of your work. I've been thinking about this for about a fortnight. And
yeah. And what's weird is it's a bedtime story and I can't sleep. Scared me awake. The Children Played at Slaughtering. That's hilarious.
Well, the publication inspired a cultural heritage movement across Europe for other collections of tales told in the oral tradition to be gathered and published.
And what's amazing is that we're still reading those stories, the watered-down, nice versions, to our kids today.
It's true, man. I mean, those have really stood the test of time. Even however much they've been altered, they're pretty amazing.
Okay, Munchausen Syndrome by proxy. Munchausen Syndrome is a disorder in which someone fakes an illness in order to get attention or sympathy. When done by proxy, it's pretending your dependent has an illness or is sick. So it's a form of abuse.
Oh, man. I always wondered what it meant by proxy. So if you have Munchausen syndrome, I have Munchausen syndrome. I'm going to drink this coffee until I get sick so that Rob will come over and, like, check in on me. By the way, good luck having that ever happen. I could drown in a pool of coffee and Rob wouldn't cross the street. But regardless, the point is for this.
I was going to say that was last Friday, but go ahead.
Point is, I damaged myself with this handmade M. Crow ceramic mug on purpose. to get attention. That's Munchausen syndrome. Munchausen right. syndrome by proxy is Rob keeps damaging me with this M-Crow ceramic mug in order to feel like he has to continue to take care of me.
Or I slowly poison your coffee.
In this M-Crow ceramic mug.
Right.
Made from Wallowa Lake clay. Available on the website mcrowcompany.com.
Oh, wow. We're really crossing our urine streams here. So it wouldn't work for me and you because
both with each other dead?
Yeah, we'd both just be dead. Munchausen syndrome is named after a German cavalry officer named Baron von Munchausen, who lived during the 1700s. And there's a movie called Baron von Munchausen, right?
The Adventures of Baron von Munchausen.
And it was directed by...
Terry Gilliam, I believe.
Terry Gilliam, that's great. The same man who directed lots of great movies, The Fisher King, that Monty Python did. But Baron von Munchausen was a man who traveled widely and was known for his exaggerated tales and untruthful stories. In 1951, when Richard Asher started to diagnose this form of abuse, he remembered Baron von Munchausen and his exaggerated exploits and decided to name the condition after him. That's not a great legacy there for old Baron von Munchausen.
But also for Richard Asher. Like, who is Richard Asher? No idea. Who's Munchausen? Oh, I know exactly who that is. Like, Asher really backed the wrong horse.
You're right. He could have named it the Richard Asher syndrome.
Could have been the Dick Asher syndrome by proxy.
Uh-huh.
Or by Dixie. I mean, he really dropped the ball. He does not live in infamy, but Munchausen. I always wondered why it was called Munchausen and if it had anything to do with the Baron von Munchausen of that movie. And it does, and that's crazy.
Yeah. So we are just finding this out as well as many of you, I should think. All right, it's time for fun facts.
Fun facts. I love getting facts.
Jared Padalecki got to work with Sandra McCoy, the Crossroads Demon, one other time. He originally worked with her on the film Cry Wolf. So, wait, did Cry Wolf come before Supernatural?
I guess so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he worked with Sandra McCoy on Cry Wolf and then working with her again here. I guess, this is his first scene with her because before him it was just Dean.
Huh.
Well, it's a great scene. Obviously, there's good chemistry between the two of them.
That's magic. When the three brothers are attacked in the opening, they are each standing next to materials representing what the three little pigs used to build their houses.
Wow, I completely missed that.
Yeah, the first is attacked near a pile of pipes representing the straw house of the first little piggy. You know the old thing. Give me that bale of pipes.
Why? How does pipes?
I don't know.
How does pipes represent a straw house?
I don't know, man. That's a reach. I'm going to, honey, it's hot outside. Where's my pipe hat? I want to block the sun.
Okay. And the second brother?
Yeah, the old hillbilly's over there chewing on a little piece of pipe.
Hey, we don't have any straw. It's okay. We'll just throw some pipes in there. Huh? Okay. The second brother
is near a wood structure representing the wooden house of the second little piggy.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And the third brother has to go to the bathroom, and he's going wee, wee, wee. So
no.
when he goes to take a tinkle, he's going wee, wee, wee.
All
wee,
the way
wee,
home.
Wee.
No, the no. third brother hides near a stack of cinder blocks, which is supposed to be bricks. Why wouldn't it have just been bricks? I'm confused by this.
I don't know.
No wonder I didn't get it, because it didn't make any sense.
And I am also kind of annoyed there was no wee, wee, weeing.
You wee, wee, wee. You just go wee, wee, wee all the way home.
Hey, I'm including you, aren't I? Wee, wee, wee. I'm not saying me, me, me.
Why was it pipes and cinder blocks? It could have been straw and bricks, and then I would have gotten it.
Then we would because they were thinking that their audience was smarter than you and I are, and they're probably right.
Yes.
Probably everybody else got it, and you and I were like, duh.
And the frog. We never got the frog. Somebody needs to kiss the frog.
Yeah, maybe that was a WB reference, because the show used to be on WB. Maybe it was a reference to the WB frog. The WB.
That's right.
I was remembering that there was a Simpsons joke years ago when the WB was a network and they had the Michigan J Frog. You know, Homer's watching the TV and Michigan J Frog comes out and goes, "It's on the WWWB, another show that no one will see."
That's funny.
And then the frog walks off to Jake.
The surviving victim of the attack on the three brothers, Kyle, and his doctor, Dr. Garrison, both share names with characters from Comedy Central's South Park. Uh-huh.
Ah, wouldn't have gotten that.
I didn't know Dr. Garrison was a character there. But
I didn't know Kyle. I guess Kyle, but Kyle, you know Kyle.
Look, we might have had sort of not the best reviews of the show, but this podcast has been very enjoyable.
And, it's clever. It is a clever episode of TV. The problem is we hold Supernatural to a high standard. Any other show that pulled off what they pulled off in this episode would have gotten wonderful, bushy reviews. But, you know, look, Supernatural's knocked out so many balls out of the park that when it's a triple, we're like, meh.
Yeah. You know? And look, it's we're also used to these days, we're used to watching seasons that are 7 to 12 episodes long. And with a show like Supernatural, well, this season has like 17 episodes or something, but normally they have about 20 to 22 episodes. So you're going to have filler episodes that don't necessarily follow the plot of what the through line is. And the through line of this season, I'm just very involved in it. I'm like, I want to go back to that, you know. So I remember watching these in real time, watching episodes, seasons like this, and going, and then you get to this kind of episode and you're like, get back to the meat and potatoes of what's going on, you know?
Yep, I hear you.
But that being said, like you said, it's always good. It's Supernatural.
Hey, it's Jared and Jensen. They make good TV.
Yes, they do. All right, we'll see you next time, everyone.
Yeah, we will. Join Patreon. In the meantime, we'll see you on Patreon. And now here come the credits.
This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars included Sandra McCoy, Christopher Cousins, Ava Hughes, and Maxine Miller.
Bedtime Stories was written by Catherine Humphreys and directed by Mike Roll.
Editing by Tom McQuaid. Music by Christopher Leonards.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
This episode originally aired on November 1st, 2007.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher, as in, it rhymes with hate. Like, I hate it when you guys mispronounce my name for two seasons.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, baby?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
He was our guest.
That's right.
This episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter, won't you? At SPN Then and Now.
And become a member of the podcast at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
By the way, do you notice what producer Steve did there? He said, another grim crime.
Yeah. She confirms she was poisoned. She was poisoned. She confirms she was poisoned. He accepts the truth.
She was poisoned by an Italian. She was poisoned.
She was poisoned.
Story Mill Media.